If liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. Hello, and welcome to episode 29 of the Same Old Wombles. We're brought to you by some of us who put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. By the fans, for the fans, now and forever. We are non-affiliated, proudly unofficial with the Same Old Wombles. My name is Mark Lewis, and I was interested to read that despite missing several key players through injury, last weekend the Dons overcame adversity to come from behind, rally and beat. No, unfortunately, it wasn't the men's first team. It was the women who beat a strong Cambridge team 3-2. So well done to the AFC Wimbledon's women once again. Tonight's panel features Adam Proctor and Niall Cooper, with Matthew Cooper and our returning guest in his capacity as part of the Hall of Fame organising group that we're going to talk about, Mr. Ray Armfield. Welcome, everybody.
Hello there.
Welcome, Ray.
Thank you.
Welcome, Ray. On tonight's show, we'll talk about the women's team going top of the league. We'll review Doncaster for as short a period of time as we can get away with. And of course, we're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. What is it? How has it come about? And how can all fans get involved in voting over the next few weeks? And of course, we'll have some numbers, which who knows whether or not Adam will actually get 2 weeks in a row. Welcome to episode 29.
All I wanna do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to
Great stuff.
them.
Well done, Mark. That was amazingly succinct. Very
Thank
surprisingly
you.
succinct, mate.
Where's the quote from?
Where's the quote from?
Yeah.
Gary Lineker.
Oh, close.
Sir Braverman, yeah?
Close.
I would have thought the second one was definitely not very close.
No, the second one was just a quote about the women. The first one is on the statue of George Orwell by outside the BBC.
Oh.
And it's a prelude to 1984.
Yeah.
No, to Animal Farm.
Brilliant. Any George Orwell quote is good by me. So that's excellent.
Absolutely. Rock and roll. So I spent most of Saturday watching rugby, which was really not a polite thing or a pleasant thing to do as an Englishman. And even my son, who's Welsh, was most upset because he wanted to be happy because Wales won and then saw how upset I was by England, frankly, being pathetic and being thrashed by France. And by the by, there was a football match going on in Doncaster. And yet again, for the fifth game in a row, could be wrong, Ray will correct me. Fifth game in a row, says Ray.
Yeah.
We took the lead and we lost. We blew the lead once again. And there's a stat which I'm not going to use this week, don't worry, Adam, somewhere of how many times since the beginning of last season we've taken the lead and lost, or not won anyway. I think it's 26, but look it up somewhere. It was, was it as depressing for you guys as it felt like for me?
Yes.
As soon as we went one up, as soon as we went up one up, I think everyone knew exactly what was going to happen. And it just felt so. I don't understand what's gone. It's really odd, isn't it? We've gone from a side that doesn't leak goals to a side that now everyone wants to play. And also, I just get this, you know, that when sides are on a really bad run and there's always one team they want to play, like Stevenage were on a really bad run, they played us. And Crawley have been on a really bad run. And now we've got them coming up, aren't we, on Saturday? Is that right? It's just like, oh God, I'd literally rather be playing someone on a roll or whatever, but to be playing someone whose form is shocking.
This right now reminds me of the COVID season, which is that not that I'm a fan of global pandemics, because I don't think they're necessarily a good thing, but it would be quite nice to have a global pandemic now so the season just stopped. Because frankly, I'm struggling to see where we're going to string any kind of results together, because you just feel we're back to that fragile mentality that we've got, where it's kind of like, what the hell is going on? And my God, do we miss not having PK and Pearce together in centre back? I mean, like that defence used to feel solid, and now it's like, you know, I mean, I know you can point to the stats, and a lot of the teams we've been playing against have been converting the goal, converting their few shots on targets, but it just feels like Matt says, you know, as soon as we were 1-0 up, there was almost that sense of horrible inevitability that we were just going to throw it all away.
There might be some good stats out there for sure, but from what I saw from the Don's vlog and the highlights is, A, we didn't defend in any capacity whatsoever, so that was a little concerning, and B, we're still fiddling around, dribbling in the box to try and tee up some kind of perfect shot or something. I don't quite know. I mean, I didn't look at the stats and that, but I'm like, did we actually shoot at any point, you know, after we scored one goal? You know, it was crazy. And that, I mean, I have to say, the last minute, obviously, bit where it was cleared off the line by Gislett was unbelievable. Oh my word, you couldn't be more in the way. It was amazing. I mean, it was a really good defensive block. It was just so mad. I just wanted us to finish on a high, like, just, you know, get some youngsters in, do some cool stuff. I don't know what I don't know what is going on. It is really weird. And why do we fall apart after scoring a goal so quickly? Like, is it just we can't defend? Is it just that we're stressed out by the fact that we are in the lead? What is it? Because there must be something going on there, because it's just weird. I think I said the other week, this is all a bit weird. It's weird again, you know?
I'm going to bring Ray in. He's got more knowledge of defences in the 80s that used to fall apart than we have.
Yeah, Saturday. When I heard that we went a goal up, I thought, great. And I was even more pleased when I heard it was Josh. And then somebody sent me a little 10-second clip of the goal, and I thought, that's the kind of goal that we normally give to other teams. So perhaps today is going to be the day. And literally, I went out and did something, and I came back and we were 2-1 down. And I couldn't believe it. But we have to win on Saturday for a number of reasons. I truly loathe Crawley as a club. For a number of reasons, stemming back to previous owners, a certain previous manager, the loads of money behaviour of their fans. But most of all, it's my birthday. And I cannot stomach losing at home to Crawley on my birthday. So if you're listening, Mr. Jackson, for heaven's sake, win, please. And heaven was a late choice of word there.
Who are the women's team playing? Because that might be, you might have to defer your birthday.
are we all switching allegiance to the women's team now?
I never switched allegiance.
Joint allegiance, man.
No, I mean, women's team have always been, you know, always pro the women's team.
What's the situation with PK? What is it? Does anyone know? Mark, do you know what's up with PK? Because
the only thing Phil's
all right.
The only thing I know is he's pretty active on the old TikTok. So maybe that's keeping him up at night, and he's needing to sleep during the day when there's games on. Who knows?
That's not a year Adam, for
Mr. Adam,
is it?
Adam, if I was going to say, right, if you're talking about people needing to sleep during the day, that would not be where I put in PK. There's a number of other defenders that actually are playing that probably could do with that look like they're asleep. That's, I mean, honestly, it's just like, what has happened? And the other thing I think is actually the loss of Pell. I think that makes a huge difference, because Pell means when you have Pell and Woody in the same team, there is a kind of midfield defensive cover that is quite robust, and that makes a big difference. So I think we can look at that being a significant reason for why our form has evaporated. I mean, the other thing we have to, you know, on the other side of the pitch, you know, Ali looks good, doesn't he? So, you know, that's, Davidson could obviously do with a rest. I think we've known that for weeks. But, you know, if we can get, I don't know, Pell's still miles away, isn't he? That's a problem. You know, we've still got ages.
So for whatever reason, Pell is the only one that Jackson seems to have been happy to tell everybody about, i.e. he's going to be out for a number of weeks. I saw Hospiller coming in about 5-3 before the last home game. And I said, we need you fit, Hus, we need you fit. And he said, I am fit. It's like, well, clearly you're not, because you're not even in the squad. So I don't know what's going on there. Apparently, and anyone who hasn't read it before, check out 14, The Frog, who's Mick, the owner of the Alex, on Twitter, because his blogs are wonderful and very straightforward and very down to earth and very written like a South London bloke. And he was saying, and he went to Doncaster. I haven't spoken to anyone who actually physically went there, but he went to Doncaster and he goes to a lot of away games. So fair play to him for making the treks around the country. There were 460 odd, I think, at Doncaster. So fair play to all of those. But he was saying, apparently he played Ali right wing. He's a centre forward. He scored five goals in four games. He's just been called up by Iraq internationally, and we played him right wing. And funnily enough, he wasn't very effective.
It's weird. I mean, I think a lot of it is down to, probably in Jackson's defence, a lot of it is down to injuries and trying to get the better players into the squad and thinking you've got a formation that could do something against Doncaster. I can only assume that's the reason why, but it does seem absolutely ridiculous to me. But maybe another thing was that he was frightened because every time Ali scores, we've lost. So he's thinking if someone else scores, you know, maybe that's the thing. It's a weird combat. I mean, I just guess I'm pleased that we've recalled these players. So what have we got? Jenkins back and Bendor and someone else, I can't remember. But we've recalled some players who've been out on loan. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Is Bendor back? I know Jenkins is back. It would be nice if other people were back. Because five substitutes, three games in a row, four outfield subs, and then you bring them on in the 89th minute. What's the point?
Yeah. I mean, I think Jenkins comes back. I think Bendor, I wouldn't be surprised if Bendor's straight in the team, to be honest with you. We were saying it just before we started that he feels like a Pell character. He's got that similar sort of attribute to Pell. And that's what we've been missing, as Niall's saying. You know, that's what we've been missing.
I didn't realise you'd recalled some players. That's really good. But again, this 89th minute subs, all that kind of stuff makes no sense to me whatsoever at all. Like, no sense. It's like, when we've talked about it on the pod about, you know, let's get the youngsters out there doing some stuff. You can't do anything for 1 minute of normal time plus whatever the injury time is. It just doesn't, it seems really, like, why bother? Like, I don't understand. I know the game, you know, the game, there's so much happens in a shorter period of time in the game these days, right? But give these guys like 15 minutes at least, surely. That makes sense to me, you know?
It's got a bit of
Ray, can you remember, because we were like 11 or 12 and you were maybe 15. At the time, when we were blooding the likes of Kevin Gage, quiz question on a quiz that I got right once, youngest ever player to play for Wimbledon in the league, the likes of Gage and Hodges and even Winterburn on loan and Morris and Fishenden and Downs, and you know, you could keep on reeling them all off. The original crazy gang, and even before we had Perry and Blackwell, did they all come in at like 17, 18 and then dip out again, or were they thrown in and left in there to sink or swim by Bassett?
No, those 17-year-olds. I mean, Gage was 17 years and 11 days when he made his debut. I think Wally was 17 as well. And I think Glyn can't have been much, much more than that also. And bear in mind, you know, that was late 70s, early 80s, League Two. So that was no walk in the park either. That was sink or swim for lots of them. So I think it's four players that we've got back on loan today, or back from loan, and they need chances, because I've heard Isaac's back as well. I think perhaps earlier this season, late last season, there was a temptation just to fill the bench for the sake of it, because you knew there'd be one or two who would never come on. But I think now you've got to have six oven-ready outfield options, really. And if that means bloody youngsters, then you blood them.
And right now, what have we got to lose? Because to be honest with you, I think the hope was that we would be 10 points better off, you know, and in a place to push. But now it's just like, what have you got to lose? Almost genuinely, put some players in who feel hungry, want to prove themselves, because in theory, you know, two or three of the players that come back will probably be regulars next year.
I'm with you, Matt. I think right now, I mean, this season's dead, right? So we might as well just look at giving some of these people that have shown promise a proper chance. because I just, you know, look at it and going like, you know, for the first time for a long time, I'm, you know, I've got massive question marks about Jackson. I know we've had injuries, but it's like, you know, we've, and I've been guilty because I've been, you know, on the board at some points when maybe I could have shouted a bit louder about certain things. And we didn't really have the choice about whether we sack managers or not, but like, you know, people were at least, there's a possibility of people listening to you. And I kind of, for the first time, I kind of think, right, well, Jackson, we've gone and lost, we've blown the last five games. You know, how much more can we continue to do this? And I'm beginning to get the opinion, right, that maybe Bassey, you know, I think he'd be the one person who could probably could come in for us, that might do a better job than Jackson. I mean, there's no doubt that Bassey's got a lot of connections in the football pyramid and a lot of people that would be interested in working with him. And, you know, I'm just starting to think that maybe, I mean, we can't afford a top quality, you know, top known manager, but that's a guy that's got Wimbledon, you know, going through his blood and actually has kind of, you know, made a bit of an impression in other places.
I mean, no, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I also, unfortunately, have dipped into Facebook this week occasionally because I still have a login. And I think we do need to remember that the John Truss board has nothing to do with the hiring and firing of managers. And what we're saying here on this podcast is our own opinions of what we think these people are related, you know, to being good managers or whatever. So I don't disagree. I think, you know, it would be... I think what you said, I don't disagree with. Whether I would want Jackson to move on or not, I'm not sure at this point. But I think that's a decision by the PLC board, who obviously get advice from particular members who are elected onto it from the Donstrust board. But yeah, we know, as we've discussed before, that we're not football people in that sense. We are more interesting, etc., strategic places. So I just want to make that point clear, because I think it's really important, because I think some people on the internet seem to think that the Don's Trust board is in charge of this stuff, and they aren't. Actually, they're in charge of more important things, actually, I think, which is about the direction of the club and stuff. So yeah, I'm just saying that.
I mean, I think it's tricky with Jackson, because, you know, he was done by the loan market. I think that he was done by the loan market. He's done by a couple of injuries, but the loan market has worked against us. It felt like 2 years in a row. It feels like deja vu, but it's really worked against us. But he's getting rid of a manager again, who, let's bear in mind, he was, you know, manager of the month, wasn't he, for what, December or something, and November, December. So, you know, let's give it. I'd say give him a chance to build a squad and see what he can do. Because otherwise, we're going to get in a similar situation of chopping and changing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the easy. Like, that's the easy thing, isn't it? A bit of consistency. That's the easy thing in football. Is like change a manager. You know that, and we've been very good at not doing that. Maybe some people would say that's to our detriment, but actually, we do need to think more seriously about, like, okay, what support can you put into place? And I'm sure we've talked about this on the podcast as well, about getting the director of football to provide a bunch of support, and that is obviously only recent in that sense. So, you know, and yeah, we had a bit of a nightmare loan period, and, you know, a transfer period, and we've got another one coming up in the summer with some other change. So yeah, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater necessarily.
But naturally, if we lose to Crawley on Ray's birthday, he's offended all of us and has to go.
The most important thing to remember for Ray, for those people that don't know, is that back in the halcyonic days when we used to get regular home wins, then Ray would always pick up a Chinese on the way home.
Yeah.
and it was an outstanding joke, you know, Chinese for Ryan Chowan. And unfortunately, that's been, I guess, so few and far between. Does your local Chinese takeaway even know who you are anymore, Ray?
Well, I rang up last time that we won, and they said, who? But joking apart, 2023, I've lost 16 pounds. Yeah. Mainly to fit into a wedding suit, but partly because of that. So,
take the Wimbledon diet.
Yes, I should market this, shouldn't I?
That's it. No fast food. No fast food until Wimbledon win at home.
Well, how would my diet survive? Okay, I'm going to pivot across because we could talk about this in various different ways, and a lot of us are obviously understandably frustrated, and I completely get why other people online are expressing their opinions quite vociferously, perhaps not so eloquently, but everyone's entitled to express themselves however they want to. Adam's right, you know, in terms of sometimes the criticism is aimed at the wrong place, but all the rest of us that do understand the way the board is set up and the way the club is set up and the way the director of football and the manager and his coaching staff obviously run the club and run the team can do is try and educate everyone else about that. Anyway, pivoting across to why we got Ray on for this evening, because Ray and Niall and myself and a number of other people who put themselves forward are part of a Hall of Fame group, which I know is a bit of a thing that Niall's been running with, but because we listen to Niall quite a lot on the pod every week, I thought I'd let Ray explain what the Hall of Fame is, what information's already gone out there, and how it's all going to proceed from here on in.
Yeah, we're up and running already, so you can vote at the moment. There's seven eras of players. We've started from the outside and we're going to work in. So currently you can vote on our earliest players up to the end of the Second World War. And then from 2011 onwards for the newer players, we'll work our way in to a finale in the middle somewhere. It should be a weekly vote. There's an email going out to most people who are fans, ranging from season ticket holders down to people who bought something in the shop. So it should cover most people for them to vote. And then we'll have, in theory, 21 inductees to go in the Hall of Fame, three from each era, and then hopefully a celebratory dinner somewhere, not necessarily Chinese, to welcome them. So
I'm sure the club can do better than Chinese.
I'm sure they can, okay. Yeah.
So what I thought would help is, I know, Ray, you've been involved. Well, the other thing to mention is that the people that are involved in terms of who put the names forward, that's just literally anyone and everyone who responded to the advert on the website, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I think the call went out from the Don's Trust website. You know, if this is your bag, get in touch. And that's how I got involved. There's plenty of volunteering opportunities for various roles in the Don's Trust. Most I don't go for because they're not really my thing, but this always was because it dovetails into the stuff I do for the match day program also. And I thought, yeah, I could lend a hand with that. So I did. And here I am, along with 19 others.
Yeah, 20 people of different ages and different groups. And a lot of us don't know each other and never met apart from the Zoom calls and stuff that we've done, which is good. So the first vote you said is pre-war people.
Yes.
So even those of us on the same old Wombles on the weekly pod, we may be a little older, but as Adam's face shows, we're not necessarily in a position to know who these pre-war people are. Can you...
Mark, do stats on them. Do stats on them for Adam. Go on, please.
No, that would be hard. Can you, Ray, give us a little bit of background, who they are and what they could be and what
contributions
they made?
There's, say, 10 from the earliest period. I would say if you go to the website or go to the email, there's a little bio of each player, which I got the short straw and did. Without trying to influence people's votes, I would say there's two fairly standout candidates there. But I think all 10 there are sort of worthy in their own way. I think the main thing to look at for most of them is the longevity, really, because back in the day, you know, 7-8 of your team would have played 300 or 400 games for just the one club, which obviously isn't a feature of the modern game. So I can chuck some names around, chuck some maybe lesser names around. I would say Stephen Crabtree, who's part of the project and does the historical Don fanzine, has got a very good website that has a lot more background on some of the players, and some of them have real unique and in one or two cases quite telling and passionate stories. I'll just go to one, which is George Armitage, who people might have heard of. He's a real old Corinthian spirit kind of guy. Played at the back, played at the front, so a utility type player, but he went on to be the first ex-Wimbledon player to make a full international appearance because he turned pro and joined Charlton. But there's quite a sad end to him because he got some tuberculosis quite late in his 30s, thought it would ruin his career. It didn't, and it affected him so much that he ended up taking his own life. So, you know, that's a real wow thing when I looked up that. But crazy. In terms of players who've done the business, I mean, there's some real standout stats for some of them. I'll mention a couple of names. Harry Stannard, 333 goals in 426 games. Imagine that in the modern game at any level. That's sort of priceless, really, isn't it? And prior to him, Doc Dowden, similar figures, 283 goals in 311 games. I did call him the first poster boy of Wimbledon because he's one of the few players who have got quite a few photos of him knocking about because he would appear in amateur cup finals and stuff. So it's been good fun reading up on them as well and looking them up and trying to sort of present them fairly evenly so that people are making informed choices from a level playing field almost.
Yeah, but Ray, come on. We've all heard of Doc Dowden. I mean, you know, if I'm doing some research, I mean, Doc Dowden, because he wasn't just a goal scoring machine. He was with us for a long time, wasn't he? He went on to do the club as well.
As did Harry Stannard. Yeah.
Harry Stannard. I mean, they were. I mean, I'm not, you know, for all it's worth, all of our listeners, I think that's five of us. It's not going to influence. It shouldn't influence it that much, but it's useful to get, because I think those two people know about, but there was a guy, I can't remember who it was. There was a guy who was interested in he was a pilot, RAF pilot in World War II and was in a prisoner of war camp.
Yes.
What's his story?
Ron Head. He played either side of World War II. And bear in mind, he was a prisoner of war for like 4 years. He came back after the war and just carried on scoring the same numbers of goals that he did prior to it. I mean, I think he ended up with 131 goals in 224 games as a big old-fashioned target man, which is hell of a numbers, really.
I'm writing these stats down because he thinks I'm going to do it for the numbers game, but I'm not.
But yeah, I mean, one or two of our very, very older players and fans have very good memories of him, which I believe somebody on here might have captured a few memories in one of their books, what they wrote. But yeah, I mean, mention his name in any sort of Wimbledon folklore thing, and yeah, his name pops up.
That sounds amazing to go through that experience to you know, score those many goals, and then, I mean, I just imagine being a prisoner of war during that. I mean, it sounds incredible. He sounds incredible.
4 years as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, clearly, Matt, he must have inspired Escape to Victory.
I was gonna say before we big up Niall's book, I will work out a way to create. I'm gonna put a link, obviously, to a charity that involves male suicide, because I think, obviously, what Ray's talked about, like we know that unfortunately that's a really big issue at the moment in terms of. So I think, yeah, I want to put a link to make that clear that if any of our five listeners want to support that kind of stuff, it's really important because it's a big issue at the moment.
No, that's a very good point. And realistically, actually, ex-players, we're talking about a lot of ex-players here, obviously, that will feature potentially in the Hall of Fame voting. What players do post their career? A lot of players outside the modern era obviously didn't earn enough to be able to retire immediately and then had to go off and try and form a career. And I heard an interview even at the weekend. It wasn't with a footballer. It was with a former Olympic speed skater, I believe. And they were just talking about when the adrenaline goes, what do you do and how can you replace that? So, well said, Adam. That's a good point to have in.
It's an everyday thing for a lot of normal, everyday people who are going to very, very dark places. We all need to look out for one another. I think that's a really important thing. Mm-hmm. Support one another through that. And there's some great charities out there. So obviously Mind and the Samaritans spring to mind. But it's tragic to hear that someone who played for us got to a situation, and he, unfortunately, he's not the only one, because throughout history there have been other players that have
indeed
up place. So,
well, Gary Speed's obviously much more modern era that people know about as well. So that was a very sad, tragic history, as tragic story. Okay, let's try and bring the mood back up again. And I thought, just as a little bit of frivolous fun, we don't have the shortlist yet for the 80s. What is the 80s era going to be, Niall? Is it 81 to 90, or how does that work?
There are two 80s eras. So there's 1977 to 86.
Okay.
And there's 86 to 2002.
Hang on a minute.
Let's take those eras in turn.
Wait a second.
Just throwing around names ourselves.
Oh, no, Mark, wait a second. What's the first 80s era doesn't seem to have any years that revolve around the 80s.
77 to 86.
Oh, okay. Okay, fine. I've got it now.
So that's the rise. You might have heard about this, Adam. The rise through the leagues up into what is now the Premier League. That was quite significant for a team called Wimbledon FC.
All right. No need to take the mick. Blimey.
So between us, just as a bit of fun, all five of us here, throwing out three names. Who would be your three names from that era? Starting with Dre.
Which one are we talking about? The 77 to 86. Oh, well, I'd be very sort of biased. I mean, there's a temptation to go for favourite players rather than best players, and some are both, of course. But I'd maybe have to look at Nigel Winterburn from that era. I've not got the list in front of me for those, but obviously John Leslie for bridging the gap from Southern League into the Football League. A third one, I don't know. See, a lot of those might have gone back in the earlier period for me, so I'll stick with those two for now and sort of reserve my judgment on the third one. But I will say, I think when we come to it, the 86 to 02 one is going to cause a lot of debates, because that's a big old period with some big old names.
So, Mr. Matt, your first game is 83, am I right?
82, man.
82, okay. So how many of these, I don't know how many of these eras you can remember between 82 and 86?
I'd have to go with Ray. He's the number one choice is definitely Nigel Winterburn. I mean, having seen him, he was amazing. He was an incredible player. As another player, I loved Glenn Hodges. As a player, he was a marvellous player. Then does Alan Cook fit into this era? So, you know, because Cookie's got to be somewhere, and I'm guessing he fits more into this era than he does into the following. Although he was, you know, knocking goals in the first division, 86 to 88. But yeah, it's a tricky one. But my feeling is, you know, definitely Nigel Winterburn, amazing player.
So Adam's either studiously reviewing lists, or he's got no idea as to who these players are.
Both things are happening. Yeah, I'm looking at lists. So I'm not going to answer this question because I would get the wrong year.
Oh, well, we'll pivot to Niall then, because Niall's obviously sorted this out, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, Nigel Winterburn was my first choice. Easily on that. I mean, I think it's hard not to look much beyond Alan Corker's been another one that I would put in that mix. But I mean, that team that rose up through the leagues is just, it's, you know, I can name probably the team that played in the 82-83 championship winning team, you know, that a whole lot, you know, from Gary Peters, and, you know, you had Mark Morris and Mick Smith and Steve Galliers and John Leslie. And
who was left back?
Steve Hatter.
No, he wasn't. He was a centre back.
Was he centre back? Mm, left back. Yeah. Left back in 82-83. Now
you put him right.
Dean Thomas.
Or Brian Sparrow on loan, I believe.
Sparrow is the one I would have guessed, yeah. Actually. Yeah. Give him a bit more time. So, I mean, and then obviously Lurch is in goal. You know, so like, where do you put Lurch? Because Lurch left in 88. So Lurch's main era was that time. So, you know, not having Lurch, Besson there, you know, and you want Winterburn and you'd want Cork. Those are three people that are like, absolute Wimbledon legends, aren't they? So it's hard not to look much beyond those three.
No one said it was going to be easy.
It's not easy. Not easy.
Yeah, who came up with this idea of three, honestly?
We were lucky in the Hall of Fame committee, is because we were actually told to look at just name your top 10 from those eras, and that was hard enough. But like now you're asking us to get it down to our best three. I haven't given that much thought, and I'll tell you what, 86 to 2002 is going to cause me a right headache.
Right, let's just finish off one era at a time, because obviously this is my childhood era as well. Ray makes a very good point. You know, was John Leslie the best player, one of the best players of that era? I mean, given that he played for us from about 73 onwards, John Leslie was my boyhood hero that I mentioned on the pod before about, you know, crying when I saw him score an own goal or whatever. I was about 12 at the time. So I feel I'd be betraying him if I didn't put him in, from my perspective. I think I'd have to put Besson in. It is hard because I'd probably put about six in from this era and maybe fewer in from other ones. But and realistically, Cork came back from two broken legs, I believe, certainly one anyway, and scored so many goals at so many different levels all the way through. But yeah, again, it'd be churlish to miss him out as well. So that's probably it. Although, again, I'll probably contradict myself and say if I don't put someone like Steve Galliers in, because he also came up through the ranks and was the epitome of that Wimbledon team that would kick you first and ask questions later. Let's face it, we would absolutely die for a Steve Galliers type player in our current midfield, wouldn't we?
And Nigel Winterburn, though, Mark,
yeah.
four consecutive years of being player of the year.
Here's an interesting one. To me, and this is hindsight, to me, Winterburn doesn't feel like a Wimbledon player.
Yeah, no.
He feels like an Arsenal player, even though he was obviously our player for a long time. And we got him off the scrap heap, so to speak, because he was released by Birmingham. But yeah, curious one. Adam?
Well, obviously I've been Googling to try and remind myself of what players exist, obviously. But Cork obviously is up there for me. I mean, you know, but the mad thing is, and Joseph is definitely there, and Besson, obviously. I mean, this is ridiculous, right? I'm just Googling, trying to try and find players to see if I can remember. And it's mainly what Ray said, is like, who was your favourite kind of players? I don't know what this website is, but it's footballdatabase.eu. This is, honestly, it says country Angleterre, so it's half French, apparently, I think. And then city, Milton Keynes. Foundation, I know. Foundation 1889.
Throw the website away.
Dissolution
Adam,
year.
There are so many, Adam, there are so many other places you could look.
Dissolution year 2004.
Look for things.
What the heck?
Adam, look.
Why do you send me down these horrible rabbit holes? Why?
Don't you see this bookshelf, right? This bookshelf. That's plenty of other places to look. Niall, any of those
if
books.
If I could turn my camera around, the bookshelf with all those books is above here as well.
Well, you're not picking
the book. Read one of them, Adam.
I'm not getting a book out in the middle of the podcast.
This is such a same old Wombles conversation.
Cork. I'm going Cork. Corking. I don't know about the other two players, but
if Ray, have you thought about a third one yet? Are you going to pin your flag to the mast?
I'll keep my powder dry for now, I think. But there's lots of very good candidates.
And okay, 86 to 2002 is going to be even more annoying and argumentative. I'm not going to even try and narrow us down to a three from the last group, but kick us off on 86 to 2002. while Adam finds Niall's books.
Right, who was the first captain of Wimbledon? I just want to go back. Who was the first captain of Wimbledon?
First captain ever. George Raymond.
George Raymond.
He's on the list.
Played for the first 11 seasons, which is why I've stuck him on there.
It feels like someone from that first team, that first of a side, feels like an important thing. Sorry to bring it all the way back, guys, but I just
No, that for me.
Interested in these people.
That for me was when I looked. I love that picture, by the way. Adam's showing that you really shouldn't see it. Anyway, on that was one of the hardest things about looking at when you look at the pre-war era, because it's like, you know, should you really have, you know, do you really need to have people from that first team? And I was really dwelling on, like, that's where we formed. So there's obviously a massive thing that's really important about that. Because you think about the first AFC Wimbledon team, you know, there's elements about, you know, those are really important players as well. Were they the best people to ever put on a Wimbledon shirt? Clearly not. But, like, you know, but...
We're not talking best players. We're talking legends. And there's something else that has to... They have to have done. There's something else that shines through. You know, that's why there are certain people that are, you know, arguably, if you're putting our best players together, there are people in there that aren't on the list.
And what period are we?
Legend is something else.
What's the period now we're in?
We're talking pre-war now. What? Your favourite era, Adam, that you know a lot about.
Niall's gone back to pre-war. I asked Matt to do 86 to 2002, so Niall went back to pre-war.
No, Matt went back to pre-war, not me. Matt said, who's our first ever captain? That's where it started, Mark.
Let me give you a quick quote about George Raymond, which I did find in one of the ye olde Wimbledon news papers. It said, George Raymond, a good captain who will look well into the scientific part of the game and see that his men are well drilled in both long and short passing.
I love it. There you go. He's my third choice.
Yeah. Yeah,
but 11 so we were seasons. Playing long ball in 1920, were we?
That's it. Yeah,
in 1889. That.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that was A&E. Of course, it was. Yeah, turn of the century, just about.
That's also the reason why we stopped playing at Wimbledon Common, because the old conservatory people were saying that we were endangering the carriages crossing the Common by our long ball tactics.
Guessing it in the mixer.
Exactly. So that's probably all poor George's fault.
Speaking of getting it in the mixer, come on then, Niall. Give us your three from 86 to 2002.
Oh, no way, you can't do that. That's next week's podcast. I can't even get close. That is a nightmare. Robbie Earl and two others.
Yeah, there's loads in there. There's like Earl, Gale, Ikuku, Thatcher. There's so many.
Adam, yeah, exactly. 86 to 2002 is really tough. It's Robbie Earl and two others. That's where I'm going to go.
So here's a question for Ray, because this was mentioned on another podcast. Which quite well-known ex-Wimbledon players from that era do you think will miss out completely, just as a gut feeling?
Oh.
Well, see, Ray knows. You mean who won't make the top three?
Yeah.
Ray knows.
No, I'm not saying in terms of the shortlist. I'm talking in terms of people will have known the players for a certain thing, and then they may or may not necessarily be the most popular overall, because we've got hundreds of, maybe even thousands of votes going to come in.
One that comes to mind, and one that perhaps almost solely made journeys to Sellers Park worth doing back in the day, who I fear might miss out, is Michael Hughes.
Yep.
Because, again, very, very worthy choice. But there's just so many names. And I say that period will cause the most debate, shall we say.
Leonardson.
I
wouldn't put Leonardson in. Even though we have the same birthday, the same birth date, he's exactly the same age as me to the day. But yeah, Michael
very,
Hughes.
Very similar in height, you and Leo.
And talent.
The parade of birth.
Yeah, that's for those of you who've watched the film Twins, will be thinking that.
That's a great film.
There's going to be one obvious name, I think, who won't get in, which is going to cause some problems.
I don't want Dennis Wise in. That's a personal opinion.
I think that's the one that's going to cause the problems. I think that's that's going to be interesting.
But then it's like Nigel Winterburn's an Arsenal player, which I get. If you talk about Hall of Fame, and Dennis Wise is a Chelsea player,
is Michael Hughes a Palace player?
No.
Marcus Gale might be an ambassador for Brentford, but I still think of him as our player.
Mm.
Whereas Dean Holdsworth got so many other off the field connotations, you know.
Yeah. But Nigel Winterburn, going back to, I think for a time he was our player. And as a legend, he does talk about us fondly, and he stayed with us for a while and made us a bit of money in those days.
£400,000.
Show me any other left back at any other club who wins Player of the Year four times in a row. There isn't one, is there? Maybe him at Arsenal. I don't know.
he was just a joy to watch. Amazing, amazing player. And I would genuinely say a real legend.
All right, well,
our nan loved Nigel Winterburn. Yeah. We used to go to matches with our nan, and she'd be like, "Ooh, Nigel."
Yeah.
Oh, I will throw my three out there to be Perry for this era, to be Perry, Earl, and
Seekers. Not easy, is it? Not easy, Seekers.
John Gale. Marcus Gale, probably.
John Gale.
Yeah.
John Gale. Robbie Turner and Dave Swindlehurst. Surely.
Now, that's another podcast to do the worst ever Wimbledon team.
What about Laurie Cunningham?
Oh.
No, I might have gone Cunningham. I might have gone Cunningham, Perry, Gale, Kenny Cunningham. Maybe.
Kenny Cunningham.
Yeah.
It's right. There's just too many to choose from. Yeah. Are you going to dare to give us a three, Ray?
No, I'm in Niall's camp. Robbie Earl and two others. Seriously, those are my words exactly. Robbie Earl.
To finally make the pod quieter and shorter. Get people on who are not prepared to offer an opinion. Matt Cooper, do you have an opinion on this?
I need to wait. I think we're right. We should wait until next week when the list is out again, because I don't know who's on that 10. But it's Robbie Earl and others.
Just to round this rabble conversation up, what's the next list that's going to come out, Ray? And when's it coming out?
It should be next Wednesday.
This Wednesday.
This Wednesday now, yeah. And it should be the next two, which is 1945 to 1963 and 2002 to 2011. Yeah. Is that correct, Noel?
That is correct.
Yeah.
So that's like your Eddie Reynolds type era.
The people leading up to the FA Amateur Cup team. Cool. And it is obviously the first AFC Wimbledon as we get out towards the Football League, that lot.
Mm.
Splendid.
Which is another difficult choice as well, that.
Absolutely, yeah.
They're all difficult choices.
Pulling this ramshackle conversation together, we'll finish off tonight with some numbers. Niall's number, first of all, is 213,483.
I'll tell you what that sounds like. That sounds like one of the answers to Amelia's maths A-level questions, which I've been doing earlier on today. It's definitely the differentiation of such and such.
What's the current affairs topic of this last few days?
It's going to be Gary Lineker. Is it the amount of people that 213,483 amount of people who signed a petition to get Gary Lineker reinstated at the BBC?
Correct. Mm. Very good. On 38 degrees, there are other petition websites are available. Okay, for Ray, Ray's number is number five.
Number five, is it?
And this relates to Wimbledon and recent games and so on.
Is it how many subs that we've had on the bench at recent games?
If only. Well, I mean, it's true, but yes, it's a little bit more nuanced than that.
Bit more nuanced. Okay.
nuanced. Come on,
this one is.
I don't do nuanced. No,
it has got to be the amount of games in a row that we've thrown away a lead.
That's also true because that is actually from a winning position.
The actual answer was the number of points we've got in the last 10 games, but I'll give you that one, Niall, anyway, because it's as clever an answer, to be fair.
Quite an interesting answer. I like Ray's answer about the number of substitutes we've had. I'm sure we can think of other ones as well like that.
Okay. Adam's number for this week is 25.6.
25 points? It is then
25.6.
25.6.
The important bit is the point in it. Yeah.
Okay, well, I was going to say there was the number of points that we've dropped from winning positions this season.
He's looked that one up.
I'm looking up all the messages he sent on blooming WhatsApp. 25.6?
Yeah.
What's the point six?
This is also one of the messages I sent you on WhatsApp.
Oh, for goodness. Okay. Why do I even... I don't know why I'm on this show. 25.6. Is it something to do with minutes, or is it, or not?
So last season we complained because we had too many young players.
Oh, is it our average age of the league?
It is the average age of the squad. Yeah, last season we had the youngest average age in League One at 23 point something. 25.6 is the average age of the squad so far this season, which is the third youngest in League Two as well.
Yeah, I did see that little graph.
We don't appear to have got that balance right.
Hey, so that's 2 weeks in a row. I've sort of got it right, almost.
Sort of got it right. Okay, Matt's number to finish us off is 585.
Yes, that's right. 585. Thank you, Mark. Yes. That's right.
Well, you're supposed to guess it.
Good work, mate. Good work. That's brilliant. You've done well. Good. Well done. Thank you. Yeah.
Is that how many matches since we last won?
Well done.
Is that how many matches since we last won?
It feels like it.
Number
Anyone else care to guess, right?
Number of minutes between now and when we won a game. So, yeah.
Is it number of
last time a person who wasn't a forward scored a goal for us? How many minutes ago?
No.
The amount of away fans will take to Newport.
Almost.
The number of pies sold on a match day.
No, Matt was
average
very, very
away
close,
attendance
actually.
Is 585.
The average number of fans we've taken to away games this season so far is 585, yeah. Which is the 10th highest in League Two, which, bearing in mind our away form this year, has been close to insert expletive. Is really quite impressive. And fair play to everyone who went to Doncaster again. As I said, it was like 460-odd. Okay.
I think Newport away is going to be interesting. I think that might bring the figure down.
Which one away?
Newport away tomorrow.
Oh, no, Newport away, yeah.
And then Barrow.
Yeah.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah. Barrow is going to be one for not for the faint-hearted, as they say.
Yeah. Well, Ali's made the right choice, isn't he? He's going to be in St. Petersburg.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So, yes, just to finish off with the most wonderful bombshell of all, that we've got an international call-up, which means that Ali is going to be away for two games coming up, and he's playing with Russia. The Iraqi squad who are away in Russia. Fingers crossed he comes back with 11 fingers and 11 toes and everything else intact.
I'm
assuming...
What is more dangerous, going to St. Petersburg or Barrow?
Depends with your name's Niall Cooper, probably, you know, Mr. Amnesty International.
No, I'm not allowed.
Which one's the longest journey?
Yeah.
I think if you lose in Barrow, it's going to feel like a couple of days to get back to London.
Mm. I'm assuming Iraq don't play yellow and blue.
I fear not. Gentlemen, you've all been fabulous. Wonderful thanks to our returning guest, Mr. Ray Armfield. And check out all of the details about the Hall of Fame. And all the bios that Ray has done faithfully. And thank you very much to everybody who's contributed in that group of 20. Further details to follow from the club with regards to how the Hall of Fame categories will come out and the opportunities and the Hall of Fame announcement dinner, which will follow in the next coming weeks. Thank you to Niall. Thank you to Adam. Thank you to Matt once again. We've been the same old Wombles. www.sameoldwombles.com is the place to find us, as well as Spotify. This has been episode 29. Thank you very much, and good night.